Good morning, everyone. I sure hope you're doing well. I want to begin by thanking Dr. Chuck Ryan, PhD.
Just Dr. Ryan.
Oh, Dr. Ryan? All right. Hey. I stand corrected. For stepping in for a few weeks and teaching his series on songs that make you go, way ahead of his schedule. That was a huge help. Thank you so much. I mean, the last 3 weeks have been pretty crazy in our household, but now finally starting to feel like things are back to the normal crazy. Too crazy is too crazy, but normal crazy, we already know that. So I'm picking up our discussion on the life of Christ today. This technically is my second class, and last time we were together, we introduced our topic by having a short discussion on Jesus' greatness. We talked about Jesus being the true GOAT, right? The greatest of all time. And you may recall that we broke into our small groups and asked ourselves the question, what makes Jesus great for you? And we all shared our thoughts, and I really enjoyed it. I always enjoy hearing people's personal testimony, and especially when it comes to Christ and their experience with him, is always enlivening, and it strengthens my faith. So had a lot of fun. So really, we started our view of the life of Christ by going straight into our personal experience. And there's a reason for this. It was by design. You see, when we are talking about Jesus Christ, we are talking about a very unique personality. Let's think about it. Jesus, the historical man, could be classed among a group of people who have existed in history, whom we might describe as religious leaders, right? If we're trying to create a class for what Jesus was in history, we might describe him as one of the religious leaders. Some might call them moral teachers, men like Moses, Socrates, Muhammad, Gautama Buddha, Confucius. All of these men are historical figures whom people through the centuries and even to this day look for to get guidance on how to live a virtuous life, right? And many people class Jesus of Nazareth among them. That view that Jesus was simply a moral or religious teacher is not entirely false, if you think about it. If we are trying to create a category that places the historical man, Jesus of Nazareth, in historical context, then probably moral or religious teacher fits the bill. Right? After all, he was not a business leader. He was not a military leader. He was not a political figure who restructured the political system in his time. He was none of those things. He was a leader. He started a movement which is still recognized to be tremendously influential, one of the most influential in history. But he was none of those things. He really was a moral teacher. You could say that. It's not entirely wrong. But Jesus was more than that, wasn't he? Way more. In the Gospels, we have Jesus saying things like this. Before Abraham was, I am. I and the Father are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. And here's another one. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. These are the things that Jesus said as recorded in the Gospels. That makes him a very different kind of teacher, doesn't it? And, you know, these things that Jesus said about himself should cause us to scratch our heads. They really are. Things that should make us think deeply and seriously. They should cause us to ask ourselves some serious questions about the person of Jesus. Who is this man who speaks this way? See, if Jesus was primarily a moral or religious teacher, then our main goal should probably be, in general, to learn his doctrine and then to focus all of our energy on trying to put these doctrines into practice. That's what everybody does with their religious leader, right? We read their words, we study them, we try to put them into practice, and then we call ourselves their followers. But with Jesus, it's not that easy, is it? I'm pretty sure that we could all agree that putting Jesus' ethical teachings into practice would be better for us, definitely better for us, and the world. But is that it? Is that the call? Is that what he's asking us to do? To live a virtuous life according to Jesus. That's what they're all asking, but is this what he's doing? There was once a man who encountered Jesus who seemed to have primarily been concerned with living a virtuous life. I want us to read about this encounter between Jesus and a man known to us as the rich young ruler, as it is recounted in the Gospel of Mark. And please, Miss Amy, could you read for us?
As Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. "Good teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments: do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not give false testimony, do not defraud, honor your father and mother." "Teacher," he declared, "all these I have kept since I was a boy." Jesus looked at him and loved him. "One thing you lack," he said, "go, sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me."
Then come follow me. All right, I want us to focus on that idea. Thank you. We could talk for a long time about this interaction and the true motivations in the life of the rich young ruler and what Christ is trying to teach him ethically here, right? And those would all be great discussions that we would benefit from. But I want us to focus on the fact that this man, number one, was seeking to live a virtuous life. The question that brought him to Jesus was, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" Now, there is, he is talking about the next life, right? But I think it's not a far stretch for us to believe that he's also asking about life here on earth, right? And he has an understanding of that, because when Jesus says, quotes for him several items of the law, he says, "I have done these things." So this man is involved in his life, at least in his understanding. He is trying his very best to do the things of the law, to live ethically, to live a virtuous life, if you will. But then Jesus confronts him very simply by asking him to do one thing, one action, right? Now, when he's asking him to do something, an action, that is an ethical demand. Jesus is making an ethical demand of this man that he just happens to know the very root of the man's problem. His love for money was keeping him away from knowing a full realization of the kingdom. But that was not enough. He said, "Go sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. You see, his ethical instruction doesn't just end on the practice of ethics. It always requires more. It requires following him, his person. So there we have it. When we say that we want to follow Christ, apparently it is not enough just to focus on keeping his commandments or his ethical teaching, if you will. He always offers more, and he also wants more, doesn't he? Dr. Pentecost put it this way. Jesus, different from any other teacher in history, called attention to his person rather than his doctrine. The religion of the Christ of the Gospels is an experienced relation between him and his believer disciple. And so that brings me to a word of clarification on what I would hope this study is going to focus on. This study on the life of Christ will focus on two main things. That's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try my very best. The first one is that the person of Jesus is the foundation for the doctrine of Jesus. I'm going to repeat that. The person of Jesus is the foundation for the doctrine of Jesus. And number two, the kingdom program that is being presented by Jesus. Okay? This last topic, the topic of the kingdom program, is what separates Dr. P's work on the subject. Those of you who were here the first two times I was here, you may remember that I'm going to loosely base my instruction on the order suggested by Dr. P's work based on a course I took with him. And what separates his work from what most people have written about Jesus, or at least had written at that particular time when he published this, was his expounding on the kingdom program of God. And I want us to focus on that, right? It was his conviction, whether we agree with him partially, fully, or not at all, that looking at the gospel narratives in harmony, that's the key, looking at them in harmony, provides careful readers a distinctive development about Jesus' teaching about the kingdom of God. And what exactly is his view on the subject? I will let him speak on his own terms. I'm going to read out loud a very succinct summary of how he sees this kingdom program. All right? Bear with me. It's a little long. It becomes evident to one who approaches the inerrant scriptures from a literal method of interpretation that Jesus Christ was introduced to the nation Israel as her Messiah. Think kingdom program here. By his words and his works, he authenticated his introduction and offered Israel her promised and covenant kingdom. The nation considered the offer, and because of the opposition of the leaders, rejected it. Christ announced judgment on that nation and turned from a public ministry to that of preparing chosen men to continue his ministry following his death and resurrection. The rejection by the nation led to his death, by which salvation was provided for sinful men. But the genuineness of this offer was authenticated by the resurrection. It is this theme that will be developed in this work. Okay, so in other words, what I'm trying to say here is there are two things that we're going to focus on, right? And that just so that we are clear, my intention is not to reteach all of Dr. P's views on the subject of the life of Christ, but rather to allow the harmonic structure of the Gospels to provide the basic framework for our discussions on the subject and to place a special emphasis on the gospel's teaching about the person and the presentation of the kingdom program from Christ. Those are going to be the things we're going to focus on. I'm not going to repeat everything he's saying, but I will let it lead me. But before we move any further, it is important for us to recognize that the gospel narratives, this is an important technical thing that we need to know. as we go through a harmony of the Gospels. They were not originally intended or written in harmony. That is meaningful. They were not written in harmony with each other to be read one next to another. In other words, as far as we can tell, each gospel was originally written as a separate document by each of the gospel writers. Okay? It's very important for us to keep that in mind. There's something that we gain from reading them in the most chronological possible way so that we can possibly pick up on the things of the kingdom and the person of Christ and how he's offering himself to the nation and how the nation is reacting to that. All of these things are very powerful, but it is also very important that we remember that these works were not written that way. They were written particularly and individually by people. And yes, you have a question?
To different times and different people.
And different people.
Yeah.
Yes. So we need to understand that, that we can't let this be the sole way that we are reading the Gospels, right? These writers may have been aware of each other's works and perhaps even borrowed material from each other. But most definitely, they had a very particular approach on the subject, and it is our duty to allow them to speak on their own terms. And I'm going to try my very best as we go through this harmony in bringing up those topics and those themes because it is responsible hermeneutically, right? So what is a gospel? We know that the word gospel by itself is derived from an old English word that means good story, right? A rendering of the Latin evangelium and the Greek euangelion, right? So very basically, and we're all church people, we know that the word gospel means good news. But when we are talking about gospel narratives, what exactly are we talking about? Some people would call a gospel narrative a biography. And to a certain extent, it is, right? It is talking about a particular life, the life of Jesus, right? And some of the interactions that he had in the world and during his ministry. But technically speaking, I don't think that we can call it necessarily a biography, at least not a biography as we know it in today's world, right? I love to read biographies. You know, I have several of them at home and I enjoy reading them. But biographies have a lot of details about a person's life, you know, that the gospel doesn't necessarily go into full details about everything, right? It tells us a little bit about Jesus's birth. Not all of the gospel writers tell us about Jesus's birth, by the way. That's an important distinction. Some of them do, but not all of them do. And those who do don't give us a whole lot of details, at least not in the sense that we have grown used to in the modern sense of a biography. Where were they born? Who was their mom? Who was their dad? Which city did they grow up in? How was that life? The Gospels are not given to us that way, right? It speaks very generally about a lot of the things that we have grown accustomed to reading in a biography. So it's a very different type of biography, and I want us to briefly discuss the type of biography we're looking at. Yes?
Sorry.
Huh?
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
You're
going to
get to it.
So I personally like Dr. Bach's definition. One of the commentaries I was reading to get you ready for this class was his a short commentary that he has in the IVP series on the Gospel of Luke. And this is how he defines a gospel, right? A gospel is a theological narrative about Jesus Christ. Okay? The fact that it's about one man makes it biographical, but he's saying that it is a theological narrative. There's more to it than just discussing a historical person in the sense of biography, right? A gospel teaches its theology while recounting the events surrounding this most famous of lives. The Gospels are theology revealed in the context of life. Clothed in flesh and blood, in the Gospels are found all the drama and tension of life. To this, I would add that there are four in number. There are four canonical Gospels, not more. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they have all been written to teach something about God. As we move on in our conversation, we're going to look at some of the things that they teach, particularly about God, again, according to the purposes of each writer, but we cannot lose that from our sight. These were not just stories that were given to us so that we might know about the life of Jesus. These are not stories that were given to us so that we might know his ethic or his doctrine. We are trying to be, the writers of the Gospels are trying to instruct us in what we should believe about who God is and what is our proper response to them, to him. Okay? So before we move on, I would like for us to spend some time speaking as groups, in small groups. And the question we're going to ask ourselves is very simple. What has been your experience reading the Gospels? And then further, what is your favorite gospel and why? All right, so I'm going to repeat that again. First question, what has been your experience reading the Gospels? And then number two, which is your favorite gospel and why? Okay, let's discuss.